do it again.
This is KPFK.
Welcome to Pacifica Performance Showcase, arts and culture to enlighten, enliven, and educate. I'm your host, Donna Walker, and we've got a jam-packed show today. I've got a couple of wonderful filmmakers. We're covering two great films, both of which are kind of a family affair. In the first half, I'll have Lilit Pelikian and her husband, partner in crime on a great film, 100 Years from Home, Jared White, and they will be joining me shortly. Before we get to that, I do have a quick announcement. LA Theater Works this week is one of the great playwrights, John Robin Bates. It's a film called A Fair Country, and it stars Judith Ivey and David Dukes. I think I saw this one recorded. It's really powerful. A well-meaning American diplomat in South Africa tries to pacify his ferociously combative wife and anti-apartheid activist son by getting reassigned. Well, that probably doesn't work. But if you tune in at 10 o'clock this Sunday night, you can find out what happens. That's LA Theater Works' production of A Fair Country. And then in the second half, I'm going to be speaking with Melissa Hayslip, who's the producer, writer, director on a film I'm just wild about. It's called Mr. Soul, and it's about Ellis Hayslip, who happens to have been her uncle. And he had a show back in the day on public TV that was unlike any other, a groundbreaking, Black is Beautiful, Black Power, Arts and Culture, phenomenal show called Soul. Before Oprah Winfrey, before Arsenio Hall, before Soul Train, there was Soul. So we'll talk about that in the second half. And before we get to that, I'm so pleased to be joined via phone by Lilit Pelikian and Jared White, who are the force behind a really powerful and personal film called 100 Years from Home. It will be screening on PBS SoCal this Sunday, September 1st at 8:30, I believe. And having covered the ARPA Film Festival for many years, this screened at the ARPA Film Festival, I think, last year. And we're going to be on the ARPA Festival this year, although it is virtual. But we'll talk about that more in November, specifically November 12th through the 22nd, when ARPA Film Fest will be happening for 2020. So before that time, I am so pleased that we can highlight this film. Welcome, Lilit and Jared.
Thank you, Donna. Pleasure being here.
Thanks, Donna.
So nice to have you both. And this, as I was saying, this film will be shown this Tuesday on PBS. Tell us about this film. It's a very, very personal journey for you. And of course, the 100 years refers to the Armenian Genocide. And this has to do with your search for not only your own identity, but the family home back in what was Armenia, but is now in Turkey.
Yeah. So back when we first started this, the 100th anniversary was approaching. So this was 2015. I thought there was something that needed to be said, something that needed to be done. And I spent a lot of my free time searching for this house that I had a blueprint for using Google Maps.
Yeah. And so we wanted to do a documentary about this, about the Armenian Genocide, but we thought that Lilit's personal story and her kind of search for this house that her great-grandparents had to abandon during the genocide was a great window into this larger world, and it was much more, you know, engaging and accessible for the viewer to be able to relate to her story in order to understand this bigger history.
And you, well, I guess let's start at the beginning. There's some wonderful archival family film of mm-hmm. you, Lilith. You're such a cute little girl. And
thank you.
I know how vitally important family, culture, food yes. is to the Armenian people. And I've been privileged to kind of be privy to that through covering this festival for many years. So apropos of that, what prompts you to take this extra leap and say, I really have to not only make this search, but document this search?
Well, making the search was just something that kind of naturally was happening for me. Documenting the search was more convincing my husband there's a story here worth documenting.
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker, so she came to me with the idea of doing a film about this. And originally, we were going to do something more general about the Armenian people and how they've, you know, continued to thrive 100 years after this genocide took place. But the more we got into actually making the film, the more we realized that her personal story would be, again, a great way to get us into that.
And I think we have a lot of credit to give to our co-editor, Gayan, who basically helped us find that story.
Yeah, Gayan Agrajian.
You have some wonderful, as they say, talking heads in the film.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one of whom is our very own Maria Armudian, who's we love here at KPFK. Yes. And she brings some perspective to the trauma, the generational trauma that's produced by a family that has gone through the diaspora. And you give us some background, historical background, which I find very intriguing. It's not a dry history lesson at all. It's very personal and powerful about just how this came to be and the repercussions of it. Talk a little bit about, because you were in Armenia on the 100th anniversary, which I'm sure must have been unbelievably powerful for you. And the phrase, it rains every April 24th. Talk about that a little bit.
So there is a saying in Armenia that it always rains on April 24th. And we did check the weather report that day and looked outside, and it was a sunny, sunny day. We brought our rain jackets with us, so we assumed we wouldn't need them. And we were filming the whole march up to the monument. And as soon as we saw the monument, it started pouring. And I wasn't fully prepared for that. We kind of quickly wrapped our lenses in a little bit of plastic and then marched on. I don't know if you have more to add to that.
Oh, yeah, it was very moving to be in Yerevan, Armenia, for that 100th anniversary of the genocide. And there was just so many people there marching up to the memorial, leaving their flowers around the eternal flame. And it was very special to be able to be there to capture that.
You know, I can only imagine. I know even here in the United States, I live over in Hollywood, and I remember that day. There are marches every year, but that particular year was absolutely amazing. The people, the young, the old, every generation making this march to get some recognition.
We have a montage in the film that shows marches around the world, including Los Angeles. And I believe there were over 130,000 people that participated in that march just in Los Angeles.
And Lilith, talk a little bit about, I know our time is very limited today, but I just want to give people a taste so that they'll really take the time to tune in on Tuesday to actually see this film for themselves. But this was a very arduous journey. I think you describe it a number of times as very surreal, but you really pounded the pavement looking for this family home, and not to mention the trepidation that you had upon entering Turkey. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I was very nervous going into Turkey, and my parents were even more nervous than I was. But we joined a tour group, so I felt comfortable being part of the group and trying to be invisible within them. Basically trying to hide the fact that I was Armenian in Turkey, because there's still a lot of hatred for Armenians in that region. And the fact that they continue to deny a genocide made me feel even more uncomfortable. But it was a, as you mentioned, a surreal experience walking in the footsteps of my ancestors and realizing that I was actually the first one that go back, basically. And it's once in a lifetime kind of experience that I'd like to think we captured on film.
Well, and it's interesting because you literally have the blueprint, the family mm-hmm. blueprint of the home, but you're also carrying the imprint of all those generations. And one of the things that struck me, and we see some beautiful footage of things that were preserved, things that were destroyed, Mount Ararat, which, you know, has mm-hmm. extraordinary significance for the Armenian people, but also the role of women. And you make this point that the role of women in not only surviving, but in rebuilding as they move to new countries, to have to start all over again. And there's a beautiful sculpture of a woman. It's kind of a Sophie's Choice, where she can only carry so many of her children, and she, God, I'm getting verklempt, and she has to leave a child behind. That's a very powerful image.
Yeah. I mean, women have had to endure a lot. Many of the survivors were women. The men were the first to go, so it was on their shoulders to basically rebuild their families, rebuild their lives, and try to preserve their culture. And they're the reason we're here today.
You know, and I think of in this world, in this country, with the anniversary of women getting the vote, and there is such a highlight. We have the first nominee for black woman nominee for vice president in this country.
Yeah.
It is so extremely powerful. And you dedicate this film to your mother and your grandmother.
Yeah, I do. They're mentioned in there. They're a big part of this film. They're a big part of me.
And Jared, you are what's known as, let me get this right, Otar?
That's right, yeah, non-Armenian, outsider.
But you have
a lot of people don't like to call him that.
But you have the stamp of approval from Grandma, right?
That's right, yeah. And that's very important in an Armenian family. Mm-hmm. So, I've mentioned that I'm an Otar to some of her family and friends, and they say, oh, you're not an Otar, you know, you're
an ABC.
You're Armenian by choice.
Well, I feel like that whenever I cover ARPA, believe me, and shout out to our friends at ARPA, and of course, our dear friend Alex Kalagnomos. We adore him. He was the one that first put this festival on my radar. And just to wrap up, Lilith and Jared, what do you want audiences to know about this film when they tune in on Tuesday?
The importance of truth.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I keep coming back to, the importance of truth. You know, a big part of this film is to raise awareness about the Armenian genocide that a lot of people don't know about. And I found that, you know, countries that deny it, or even countries that don't acknowledge it, are giving tacit approval to other countries to commit further atrocities. And the best way we can fight against more of these genocides from happening is to shed light on them, is to talk about them, and to document them. And so
in our small way, we're just trying to spread this documentary and spread the truth.
And we want to spread the word for people to tune in this Tuesday at 8:30 on PBS SoCal. The film is 100 Years from Home, and the filmmakers are Lilith Pelikian and Jared White. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Donna, for having us.
Yeah, thanks, Donna.
Of course. And come ARPA time, maybe we'll speak with you again.
looking forward to it.
Okay, bye-bye. And we're going to have a little transition here to one of the greatest songs and singers of all time, the great Al Green. And this will lead us into my conversation with Melissa Hazlip, who's the force behind an incredible film. I love it so much, Mr. Soul. So let's listen to the legendary Al Green, and we'll be back.
Whatever you want to do is all right with me. 'Cause you make me feel so brand new. I want to spend my life.
I just had to hear him do that part. So great, Al Green. I am so pleased to welcome via phone Melissa Hazlip, who's the force behind this incredible film, Mr. Soul. I first saw this film at the LA Film Festival. And Melissa, welcome, first of all.
Thank you. It's so great to be here. Thanks for having me, Donna.
And you know, ever since I saw this film, I said to David Magdell, a publicist extraordinaire, when this is ready to come out, we're on it. I want to have Melissa on, and I'll just start off the interview by saying in the next 10 minutes or so, there isn't nearly enough time to cover the ground we need to on this. So I'm going to just invite you back to have a more in-depth conversation when we have more time. But we wanted to have you on because not only is the film being released today virtually in cinemas all over the country, but there's a special event coming up on Sunday. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into the film itself.
Sure. So on Sunday, we have a really special event. Because we can't be together, but normally after a film, you want to laugh and talk about it, and maybe there would be a panel or a talk back. So we're doing that online. We're creating a virtual kickback is what we're calling it. So on Sunday at 4:00 Los Angeles time, and that's of course 7:00 New York time, we're going to be holding a wonderful Mr. Soul premiere kickback. And it's a special sort of online talk back celebrating, of course, the opening weekend of our film, Mr. Soul, but also in honor of the nation's March on Washington weekend, since a lot of people are spending their time there, and it's a great anniversary.
Perfect.
So we'll be able to talk back with a wonderful host, the comedian and actress from Insecure. Her name is Amanda Seals. So she'll be our host, and then we'll have several guests from the film and people who've lived the life, and our executive producer, Blair Underwood. We'll have Stan Lathan and poets like Nikki Giovanni. And it's just going to be incredible. The Last Poets will be there. The R&B singing group will be there. Black Ivory. And then we'll have our composer there as well, Robert Glasper, and the extraordinary poet, Sonia Sanchez, and the first daughter of Soul, Layla Hathaway, the daughter of Donny Hathaway.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm just
enough time in an hour.
A little
so much fun with everybody.
A little sneak peek. We're going to go out with Donny Hathaway's version of what I think is maybe the greatest song ever written, a song for you. So stay tuned for that, folks.
That song. We actually feature that song in our film.
I know you do.
The best thing about this event, I should say right away, is that it's free, mm-hmm. So anyone can join, and especially if you've already purchased your tickets for our weekend. You're automatically linked up to come to the talk back at 4 and 7. 4 p.m. your time, L.A., and 7 p.m. in New York.
And as I said, we don't have nearly enough time to get into the really depth of the significance of this remarkable show. But let's just start at the beginning. In 1968, Soul.
Yes, in 19... 19- Yes, in 1968, the nation got soul. And this was a really, a very progressive and tumultuous time to be a Black American. It was also, there's so much happening in the nation, so you can imagine that it was rife for change. And the program, Soul itself, sort of dubbed the Black Tonight Show, but it was so much more than that, because it sought to change the public perception of Black America and really create a space for Black artists and politicians and change makers and activists and innovators to be seen and heard, which hadn't happened up until that point. So Ellis Hayslip was the host, and he invited and created a space for all of these wonderful artists and literally single-handedly changed the face of television by bringing in so many people of color and creating a wonderful, not only was it a vehicle for African-American artistry, but it was a platform for political expression and the fight for social justice. It ran for 5 years, from 1968 to 1973, and so our film is focusing on that time and celebrating that wonderful, change-making, trailblazing moment.
You know,
and how it relates to today, really.
And you know what really blew me away about this film is not only the whole vibe and Ellis's background, of course, is phenomenal. We'll get into that a little bit before we wrap up. But the people that were on this show, poetry was a huge part of this show. I mean, not only the last poets, Amiri Baraka, the musical. Let's just go down this list real quick. Musically, B.B. King, Wilson Pickett. And then, of course, as we mentioned, Amiri Baraka, Louis Farrakhan. Now, he sat down and he interviewed Louis Farrakhan. And Ellis was a gay Black man interviewing. I mean, that was a moment. And his grace, Ellis is so beautiful in that footage, because he kind of gets Louis Farrakhan to acknowledge that the Nation of Islam will accept everybody, but will try and change you, because from whence came this perversion?
Exactly. And we knew that this was, a little bit radical, a little bit edgy, and definitely, would be a little concerning. But what we did was we focused on Ellis's bravery, mm-hmm. and the importance of him importance of him being a queer man and a queer man of color to stand up for himself and really question the minister and the Nation of Islam. But at the same time, he was giving him a platform. So there was a certain amount of mutual respect. But also you saw the complexity of all of those dynamics, which is prevalent in all of our lives. But you don't often see that kind of nuance and that kind of expansiveness and kind of, all those variables on television, especially now and certainly not then. So it was really, really, really radical and somewhat revolutionary.
It was. And the other moment, and I just have to get this in, it's one of the most beautiful moments in the film for me. And you can talk about Ellis's relationship with James Baldwin and the footage between James Baldwin and Nikki Giovanni is so beautiful and so profound. Talk about that a little bit.
That is a spectacular moment. I'm so glad you're as in love with it as I am, because this was a very special episode that was so special that they had to do it in two parts, because it turned out to be a two-hour conversation between James Baldwin, Nikki Giovanni, and they taped it in London because Mr. Baldwin was living in France at the time, sort of as an expat from America, disillusioned by, all the issues around racism and inequality. So they flew the team to London, and instead of Ellis being the interviewer, he said, let's have Nikki Giovanni, who it was this young, boisterous, incredibly willful poet. And the idea that she could sit there with her mentor and with someone who was somewhat of an idol, at being 25 and he being 45, what you saw was this beautiful, almost like a brief harmonic convergence of these two iconic African-American literary giants that you wouldn't necessarily have you know, it's almost like My Dinner with Andre. Like, you feel like you're listening in on this extraordinary moment in time. And they're talking about what's real to them, not just Black literature, but Black life, Black love, Black brother and sisterhood, and how the Black family struggles and what are the realities and dynamics between all of that. It was so far-reaching and yet so intimate and so unpretentious that it's a little disarming, and it happens to be my favorite moment in the film as well.
And, you know, Ellis really came from the theater as a producer, and we see his work over the years with, you know, Cicely Tyson and so many others. Musically, I'm just going to throw out some of these people. Billy Preston, Stevie Wonder, the Delphonics, the Spinners, Earth, Wind, and Fire, and then the jazz giants, Dizzy, Tito Puente, Lee Morgan, Horace Silver. It's unbelievable. Hugh Masekela. One thing, and we've got to wrap up, but I did want to mention this because it's very dear to my heart. I think every week on this show, or nearly every other week, I say that I truly believe that arts will save us and that they are the most subversive thing there is. And I sense that Ellis believed to the core of his being in the beauty of art and the power of us to be kind of seduced by that power to transform humanity. That just shines throughout this beautiful film. As we wrap up, what do you want audiences to kind of look for and notice, and as we encourage people to see this virtually?
Well, first of all, thank you so much. I know we're about to jump off, but I just want everyone to know that now is the time to really think about the future and how we're going to come together. And as you said, the arts are illuminating and also liberating. And I believe that Ellis was always looking for the liberation of the people and knew that the art and the music would set us free. He knew that music was the floor for Black pride. And so we made music a character in the film. And as people watch this film, I hope that they will look back and see how far we've come and yet how far we have yet to go in terms of equality and evolution, revolution, all of these things that we're now thinking about as we are on the eve of a great racial reckoning. And I'm hoping it will be inspiring and it will remind everyone that Black people have always been excellent, that there's Black excellence everywhere, and that there's a truth and beauty in us all. We're all part of a fabric of America. Black history is American history. And we can move forward, especially upward and onward in the arts. I know that's how Ellis felt.
That is a beautiful, beautiful note to end on. And please promise me that you'll come back and we can have a more in-depth discussion. Really, some of the specific elements. We'll do it.
Absolutely.
We'll do it. And I'm going to go out with, as I said, Donny Hathaway. As people stay tuned for the Pocho Hour of Power in the news. Thank you so much, Melissa. And we'll plan a date for the future.
Thank you, and enjoy.
Thank you.
I've been so many places in my life and time.
Membership is welcome at kpfk.org.
Let's do it again.
With the KPFK News Minute, I'm Ernesto Arce. Activists have gathered at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. today. The 57th anniversary of the March on Washington, dubbed the Get Your Knee Off Our Necks Commitment March. It's a reference to the police killing of George Floyd, who died after being held down with police officers' knees as he protested that he couldn't breathe. March demands have intensified following the police shooting of Jacob Blake, who is now partially paralyzed after being shot 7 times. Among the speakers for the day are relatives of shooting victims, including the sister of Botham John, who was killed by an off-duty Dallas police officer while in his own home, the parents of Ahmaud Arbery, Trayvon Martin's mother, Eric Garner's son, Oscar Grant's mother, and Dontre Hamilton's mother. And with the possibility of more mass protests over the weekend, LA County public health officials are imploring people who might take part in such gatherings to take precautions against the virus. Demonstrations have been held over the past few nights over the police shooting of Jacob Blake in Wisconsin, and tomorrow there will be large gatherings marking the 50th anniversary of the Chicano moratorium. And a player boycott by NBA players that led to the postponement of 2 days of playoff games will wrap up as the players and the league have agreed to resume games tomorrow. Both the Lakers and Clippers will be in action again this weekend. The agreement also calls for the creation of a